أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين، واللعن الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين. Dear viewers, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. As you remember, in our last session, I talked about supernaturalism. I pointed out that supernaturalism or divine common theory is better than previous theories of morality, but still it suffered from certain defects and flaws. In the previous session, I pointed out a number of objections that were raised against supernaturalism. I also touched the theory presented by Muslim scholars. I mentioned that the Muslim scholars were divergent in regard with supernaturalism. Some were of the view that supernaturalism is correct, like Ash'aris and the people of narration. Others were of the view that supernaturalism is not correct. It is not a good theory in morality. They said that if this theory is right, then we will face catastrophic consequences in the long run. According to Shia scholars, if supernaturalism is accepted, then we will not be able to prove any prophet, the prophecy of any prophet, and we will not be to prove that any one of the prophet is sent by God. So we concluded that supernaturalism is not acceptable, at least from the viewpoint of Shias and Mu'tazilite scholars. In our present session, I'm going to talk about another school of thought that is also important in metaethics. This school is nothing but intuitionism. What is intuitionism? What does it talk about? And what is its theory? According to intuitionists, X is good if it is among your moral intuitions. Of course, every one of us has certain moral intuitions. Look at your moral intuitions, and whatever your moral intuitions tell you to do, then that is the right thing, and you have to do it. And whatever whatever is disliked and rejected by your moral intuitions, then refrain from doing it and stop doing it. So this is the theory that is supported by moral intuitionists. According to moral intuitionists, moral statements are of two kinds. Some are self-evident. Some are really clear and obvious. Everybody accepts it. Everybody agrees with it. But there are other moral statements that are not self-evident, and they are not that much obvious. They are sophisticated. They are complicated. It is difficult to understand them. According to the intuitionists, moral statements must be either self-evident or reducible to self-evident truths and morality. If a moral statement is not self-evident, then we must be able to reduce it to self-evident truths in morality. If a moral statement is neither a self-evident truth and nor reducible to a self-evident truth, then it must be rejected. It must be put aside. It must be discarded. It does not have any value. So we must try to pick out our moral principles by following our intuitions. We must focus on our moral intuitions. If our moral principles, if the principles we are going to choose are among our intuitions, then they are acceptable. Otherwise, they are not acceptable and they have to be rejected. According to moral intuitionists, moral basics or the basic principles of morality are not definable. We are not able to define the basics of morality. And if we make any attempt to define the basics of morality, our attempts will be fruitless. Our attempts will lead us nowhere. According to them, goodness is a term in moral philosophy that is not definable. Similarly, badness is a concept that is not definable in moral philosophy. And it is not possible for any one of us to give a precise definition of this kind of terms. In the attempts that have been made to define these terminologies have all been a failure, and they have not bear, and they did not bear any fruits. Look at the definitions provided by the cultural relativists, and look at the definition provided by the subjectivists. Cultural relativists were of the view that morality is equal to social approval. If X is socially approved, then X is good. If X is socially disapproved, then X is bad. It was the conclusion they were making. But you see, this definition is not a correct definition. This definition is not acceptable. Because if this definition is right, and if good is equal to socially approved, and if bad is equal to socially disapproved, then we must be able to say that whatever is socially approved must be good, and whatever is socially disapproved must be bad. Well, it is not possible to issue such kind of a statement. Yes, you can say that good is what that is socially approved, and bad is what that is socially disapproved. But we are not able to say that whatever is socially approved is good, because there are many things that are socially approved. Well, they are not good. For example, you can say that racism might be a socially approved fact in some societies. Some societies might be of the view that racism is a good thing, is a good idea. But can you say that it is a good thing? So we cannot deduce from a socially approved fact that it is good. Similarly, we are not able to deduce from a socially disapproved thing that it is bad. There are many nations that may like some social evils. For example, there might be societies that might be fond of heavy drinking. But can we say that it is good? They approve of it, but we cannot deduce from their approval that it is a good practice. So the definition provided by the subjectivists and the definition provided by the cultural relativists is not a good definition. Because if their definition is right, if the definition provided by the cultural relativists is right, And we must say that whatever is socially approved must be good. And whatever that is socially disapproved must be bad. Well, we cannot say such kind of thing. Similarly, the definition provided by the subjectivist is not acceptable, because according to the subjectivist, what is good? Good is what that is approved by our personal feeling. What is very much important and what matters a lot is your personal feeling. If your personal feeling approve of something, then it is good. And if your personal feelings disapprove of something, then it is bad. Then the main criterion is your personal feeling. But now again the same question arises. Can we say that whatever is personally approved and whatever is approved on the basis of your personal feeling, then can we say it is a good thing? Not at all. We cannot say such a thing. Therefore, we can say that the definitions provided by these two groups are not acceptable. And from this, we can conclude that goodness and badness are not definable terms. They are not to be defined, and nobody can define them. Of course, there are other moral issues that could be defined and that could be reduced to goodness and badness. But as far as goodness and badness are concerned, they are basic terms in morality and they cannot be defined. And when we reach the area of goodness and badness, we must stop questioning and we must stop raising any further question. So this is the claim they are making, that the basic terminologies in ethics cannot be defined. And also they say that the basic concept in morality are self-evident. It is not something very strange. It is not something new. If you make a study, if you make a research in Islamic moral terminologies, as well as in Christian moral terminologies, as well as in any other religious moral terminologies, you will come to this conclusion that there are basics in every type of morality. Every morality has its own basics and its own fundamental principles. And these fundamental principles are self-evident truths. Everybody in the community agrees with such kind of principles and accepts this kind of principles. For example, hatred is bad. Hatred is bad is a self-evident truth. Everybody agrees that it is a bad thing to have hatred towards others. Or for example, aggression is a bad thing. Again, it is something that about which no one has any doubt. Everybody agrees that committing aggression is a bad thing. So it is also a self-evident truth. You can also say that speaking the truth is a good idea. Every community, no matter where he lives and what ideology it holds, it agrees that speaking the truth is good and telling a lie is bad. So there are principles and there are truths about which nobody has any doubt, and these truths are self-evident truths in morality. So we agree that there are self-evident truths in every moral school of thought. According to intuitionists, we can compare the self-evident truths in morality to the self-evident truths in mathematics. Just as we have self-evident truths in mathematics, we have self-evident truths in morality. Look at mathematics. For example, if you say x plus y is equal to y plus x, it is a self-evident truth. X plus y is equal to y plus x. So it is a self-evident truth in mathematics. every student of math, every math student accepts this statement very easily. And no one has any doubt in regard with the accuracy of this statement. According to the intuitionist, moral statements are the truths or the self-evident truths in morality are also of the same category. They are also self-evident, just as there are statements in ethics and mathematics that are self-evident. So there are statements in morality that are self-evident. For example, we said that pleasure is better than pain. It is a statement in morality, and it is a very self-evident statement in morality. No one can have any sort of doubt, any sort of skepticism in regard with the accuracy of this statement. But of course, there might be some sort of interpretations in regard with the meaning of pain, in regard with the meaning of pleasure. But on the whole, everybody agrees, and every adult and mature mind agrees that pain is better than pleasure. Or for example, justice is good. Justice is good. It is also a self-evident truth. Every community agrees with this self-evident truth. And no community exists in the world that disagrees with the concept of justice, that justice is good. So these are the things that are found in ethics. And the thing that the intuitionists want to say is that they want to compare the moral concepts to mathematical concepts. They want to say that just as we are able to have self-evident truths in mathematics, we can also have self-evident truths in ethics. And there is no difference between ethics and mathematics. They are both the products of human mind, and when human mind can do something in one area, it can do the same in other area, and there is no difficulty in this regard. Lastly, the intuitionists emphasize and tell us that we must try to inculcate self-evident truths and morality to our children. We must teach the basics of morality to our children, and we must use the different techniques that are available in education in order to pass these meanings to our children by parental pattern, by reward and punishment, by blame and praise. These are the different techniques. We must make use of these various techniques in order to teach our children that there are certain basics in morality that have to be upheld and that have to be preserved and accepted. So these are the ideas that are supported and produced by this school of thought. But now let us have a critical look at this school. Okay, let us now have a critical look at this theory. Can we accept the theory presented by intuitionism? Is the theory presented by this school acceptable? Moral scholars have issued a number of objections in order to reject this school of thought. Firstly, we must confess that there are certain positive points in this school of thought. For example, it says that there are concepts in morality that are not definable. These kind of ideas are, of course, very much important and acceptable. But there are other points in this school of thought that can be the subject of criticism. And because of these defects and flaws, we cannot accept this school of thought. One of the difficulties of this school of thought is that it compares morality to mathematics. It says that in mathematics there are self-evident truths. So there must be self-evident truths in morality. And there is no difference between morality on the one hand and ethics and mathematics on the other. But this comparison is not acceptable. Because as far as mathematical statements are concerned, they are very precise and they are very much widely agreed. Everybody, every mature mind agrees with them. But as far as ethical questions are concerned, as far as moral concepts are concerned, they are not precise. Instead, they are very much vague. And on the other hand, they are not very much agreed. Rather, they are things on which people are very much different. Suppose, for example, when you say that x plus y is equal to y plus x. As far as x is concerned, the concept of x is very much clear. Everybody can understand the value you give to x. For example, you might say 2 in place of x. And as far as y is concerned, the concept of y is also very much clear and very much precise. And the value you give to y will also be very much clear. So the concepts are very much clear. On the other hand, the mathematicians are actually unanimous in regard with the acceptance of these concepts. But as far as ethical propositions are concerned, they are not, firstly, they are not precise. They are very vague. For example, the term pleasure, it is not clear what kind of pleasure is taken into account. You agree with the pleasure that ends with the pain for others? Or such kind of pains are excluded. On the other hand, it is not clear what kind of meaning we can give to pain, that is the opposite of pleasure. So these words are, firstly, these words are not precise. The definitions of these words are not very precise. Different dictionaries provide us with different definitions. And secondly, the moral scholars are not unanimous in regard with the meaning of these terminologies. Even the intuitionists are not unanimous in approaching these concepts. Some suggest one kind of meaning, others suggest another kind of meaning. So because of this, we can say that we cannot compare ethics to mathematics. And these two branches of sciences are poles apart from each other. We cannot say that they are the same. The second objection that we can raise against this school of thought is that according to this school of thought, the source or the origin of ethical statement is the social conditioning. It is the social environment that gave rise to certain moral concepts. And if you, for example, live in a democratic society, you will have a democratic type of morality. If you live in a secular society, you will have a secular morality. On the contrary, if you live in a religious society, then you will have a religious morality, and your morality will be influenced by the environment in which you live. The environment in which you live will have an impact on your morality. So if the moral principles are the product of the environment, and if they are the product of your social conditioning, then how can we say that we must teach what we understand as moral values to our children? How can we approach the moral principles uncritically? How can we say that these moral standards are the acceptable moral standards? For example, if you live in a society in which racism is the norm of the day, then of course you will have an uncritical approach towards racism. You will accept it very easily. But can you pass this morality to your children. According to you, we must pass this kind of moral standards to our children. But according to a critical mind, according to moral scholars, we cannot pass such kind of moral values to our children. We must criticize such kind of moralities, and we must choose and accept those kind of moral principles that are acceptable and that are important. And the last objection that I want to raise is from the viewpoint of Islam. According to Islamic moral scholars, human intellect is able to understand the goodness of certain things. But it is not possible for human intellect to understand the goodness and badness of all things. So according to Muslim scholars, there are things, the badness and goodness of which can be understood by human intellect. But on the contrary, there are things, the badness and goodness of which cannot be understood by us and by our intellect. So as far as the first category of things are concerned, of course, in such areas, we can accept the judgment of our intellects. We can accept the judgment of our reasons. But as far as the areas are concerned where our intellect cannot reach, in such areas, we cannot follow the orders of our intellect. In such areas, we must follow the orders presented by the prophets, and we must follow the prophets. And this is because of this that Muslim scholars are of the view that we are in need of prophets, because we are deficient, because we are flawed, because we are imperfect. We are not able to understand each and everything. Of course, there are things which we understand. But beyond these things, there are other things which we do not understand. If we were able to understand each and everything, then we would not need any prophet. We would not need any revelation. But since we are not perfect, and since our knowledge is not perfect, and since we understand certain things and we do not understand other things, therefore we are in need of prophets and we are in need of revelation. And it is the prophets and it is the revelation that have come to our help and that have come to our rescue. And relying on these things, we will be able to perfect ourselves and to improve ourselves. Thank you very much for listening.